exclusive farm use zone or goal three or any of the other items we've discussed.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Senator Hurd?
On the soil classifications, and I don't know what I'm talking about on soil classifications, but how did they arrive at what types of soil would be included? Like 1 through 6 in Eastern Oregon.
Well, my recollection, when I was in attendance at those hearings, the commission was looking for some objective standard as to on how to define agricultural land. The only available classification system at that time was the capability classification system. And then in looking at that system and looking at what soils and what lands fell within class 1 to 4 or 1 to 6, the commission began to develop through some task forces and committees the definition of agricultural land. It was generally agreed that 1 to 4 were your better agricultural lands, and most farms in the state that are actively farming have class 1 through 4 soils.
Is this a state, is the 1 through 4 and 1 through 6 idea, is this a state or national measure? I mean, is
the,
that kind of an average?
The capability system is a national system developed by the Soil Conservation Service, which is part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They go around to each state and do soil surveys, will publish a soil survey, and will rate the soils in a number of ways. One of them is the classification system from 1 to 8, actually. In your packet, there is a paper that explains the system, and on the last page of that is a matrix table, which is the matrix table that they use, and it explains when they look at a soil, they look at its depth, they look at its texture, permeability, and a number of factors, and then based on what they find, they will classify it either as class 1, class 2, class 3, or class 4. The reason class 5 and 6 soils, and there's really very little class 5 soil in the state because it's a very wet soil, but the reason class 6 soils was added on the east side of the mountains in particular was, I think it was Earl Pryor from Condon kept standing up and saying, if you stop the definition of class 1 to 4, you're going to wipe out the entire Columbia Plateau, which is excellent agricultural land, some of the best wheat-growing land in the country, if not the world. And so they decided to set that, and it is a broad definition. Say, let's start the process with a broad definition and an inventory. Let's inventory class 1 to 4 and class 1 to 6 in the east side, and then subtract those lands that are already built and committed to other uses. What is not built into that process, and I think is what is coming forward with the marginal lands proposal, is to say, is there something that maybe is not built and committed to non-farm uses, is not really good agricultural land, is somewhere in between. It may be class 1 to 4 or class 1 to 6 soils, which when part of a large farm operation are valuable, but when they've already been cut into smaller parcels, maybe they don't really play a part in the farm picture anymore, and we ought to treat them differently than having exclusive farm use on it.
So what I think I hear you saying is there are going to be some changes proposed that would address some of the concerns that have been expressed.
That's our understanding.
Now let me, I've been around the legislature for a long time, and one of the things that I learned a long time ago is that when you're dealing with things like human resources, you want to avoid using statistics and averages because it might not be all that applicable to the state of Oregon, and you might just be ankle deep in blood because of the mistakes that will result if you go by those national statistics and averages. Now, as I've listened to the discussion in Eastern Oregon relative to agricultural classifications, the one area where people who have been pro-land use planning and who are anti-LCDC, I should say, from the very beginning, pro and con, area where they agree is on the soil classification question. And what I'd like to know is why, and I don't know about Western, I don't know what the discussion is over here, but in terms of Eastern, is why a good objective group that knows what they're doing in terms of soil, maybe through Oregon State University, whatever, but people that would know what the soil is all about, who are dedicated to land use planning, why we can't kind of Oregonize the question now And those areas, like I've heard people that have been staunch supporters of LCDC from the beginning, describe our soil classification that we're using as absolutely preposterous. Not all classes, but parts of it, who consistently have maintained that position. It seems to me that a lot of the spark and problems that LCDC has had over the years centers on this particular question. It seemed to me that a Eastern Oregon classification could be worked out now that we're this far down the road by people who know what they're doing in terms of Eastern Oregon soils, or Oregon soil, I should say. What, do you have a comment?
I would add, I think it would be possible. I know two points. The classification system that the National SCS does is tailored to Oregon. They don't have a national standard for Class 6 soil and apply it to Oregon. They look at what Oregon is, and they look at the range of soil types, and then decide which of those are Class 1 and which of those are Class 6. At this time, there is no other system that is being used. OSU, Herb Huddleston at OSU in the Soils Department, has been developing a soil productivity rating system, but he's only tested it, I think, in some of the western parts of the state, and it has, I think, some promise for doing what you're suggesting. But you know, in
so
terms of finding
that
something
that
you
done
can
use until sometime in the future, and we don't know when it is. Jim, did you?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hurd, the question you're raising is one that is like the program since the beginning, but many of the people who raised the questions about the SCS soil capability system in many cases do not fully understand that system either, because in spite of it being, as Ron I think has indicated, a system that has its roots nationally, it does allow the tailoring by the very factors that are taken into consideration, the tailoring of that system during the mapping in any given county to the a situation that exists there, whether it be climate, terrain, or whatnot. Those are all factors that are considered. When one looks at Eastern Oregon, you find that a great deal of the Class 6 soil in Eastern Oregon is in fact being farmed, or if not under some form of cultivation, is rangeland. You get into Class 7 and 8, and very, very little of that is being used, although some of it is used for rangeland. We do not at the moment have a better system, but we certainly may find, for example, the kind of a proposal as we understand it that the Agricultural Lands Committee is putting forward may be helpful for some of the problems. Josephine County, for example, that kind of a proposal may be of considerable help in sorting out what is considered marginal land from true resource land in Josephine County. It may not be as much help in the Willamette Valley as...
Senator Hurd, what I'd like to do is have them run through their proposal, and I think you raise a very valid question, and I think it will partially be addressed in the proposal.
Mm-hmm.
That may well be a vehicle we can use to examine that in more detail. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't know who the spokespersons are going to be. We have some... I'll come up here.
There's Lois.
Welcome.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Manton Carl. I'm a farmer in Marion County. I'm president of our Agriculture for Oregon group. I'd like to introduce Lois Kanagi as our secretary, Hector McPherson as one of the members of our executive board. Our group is an outgrowth of a group that got together rather quickly and spontaneously prior to the election, and called ourselves at that time agriculture against six. We're a very strong supporter of land use and of our agricultural goals, and have been attempting to meet the goals as well as meet the criticism of what has been happening over the state. want to emphasize the fact that agriculture is an industry. I think it's being recognized more all the time. It's an industry that utilizes renewable resources. We wish to preserve and enhance those resources. Our concept is protect and preserve our farm and ranch land, as it is a state and national treasure. We want to also provide a continuing opportunity for new farm and ranch to enter into the industry. Our Oregon Farmland Protection Program puts most of Oregon's producing farm and rangeland into exclusive farm use zones. The EFU zoning has helped slow the loss of agricultural land in Oregon and helped cut down on non-farm uses that conflict with commercial agriculture. Some owners of land in EFU zones have complained that their land is marginal, not suitable for commercial agriculture. On the other hand, commercial farmers and ranchers continue to see conflicting uses creeping into what are supposed to be exclusive farm use zones. The Agriculture for Oregon proposal is an effort to improve overall protection of Oregon's agricultural land base. First, the proposal identifies land of marginal value for commercial agriculture and establishes a new zone that authorizes small and part-time farms and woodlots. Second, the proposal changes the criteria for dwellings, other non-farm uses, and land divisions to reduce conflicts with commercial agriculture operations in EFU zone. Our total concept is to improve and extend our land use activity and land use laws. At this time, I think if Hector would like to go into a little more detail on what our marginal agricultural land proposal is.
Mr. McPherson, before you start, I just want to say to the committee that we will be having this amended into a bill, and just in the interest of time tonight, I'd like you to try to restrict your questions to just the points in their outline, because we will be having some extensive hearings on this when we can really get into this. But I just wanted to get us a good overview so we were all at the same starting point.
Thank you. That's what we intended to do tonight. We did hope to get in a little bit onto the bill itself. I'm Hector McPherson, for the record. And I will introduce the marginal lands concept, and then Lois Kanaga will take you on further through on the improvements in the exclusive farm use zone. When we dug into this thing, as you, I'm sure you're aware, that the governor's task force went around the state and took testimony, and certainly they identified as one of the ongoing problems this matter of the perception that there was a lot of marginal land out there that was not suitable for agriculture or not suitable for forestry, that really shouldn't be locked up into exclusive farm use zones. Well, as a commercial farmer, and those on our Ag for Oregon group are all commercial farmers, we tended to agree that there's land out there that we felt that we couldn't make a living on and could be so considered to be marginal land. And so then we tackled the extremely difficult task then of trying to identify how you go across the state and pick out land that is marginal and therefore is suitable for less restrictions than you would have in an exclusive farm use zone, and yet would not be as loose as you would have in your built and committed or your rural residential lands. So if you'll think of our concept as identifying a new class of land in Oregon that's somewhere between exclusive farm use and rural residential, with privileges that should go into a class of land like that. Now, first I should say that the first thing we found was it was extremely difficult. I think probably someone else would have tackled this thing before had it been a little easier. The thing we found was that when you identify soil land by the soil classification was, that you really couldn't find anything in the Willamette Valley that wasn't either good forestry land or reasonably good for agriculture, although either one might say that a particular piece of land was not good for them. Whereas if you identify it only that way, then you get to eastern Oregon, And if you identified it that way, you'd open up almost the entire of Eastern Oregon. So these are the two constraints that we worked under when we attempted to identify our marginal land. Now, what we have done is to say that there are two basic tests, and one test has two parts. The first test, is land actually a part of a going farm operation? We use this test as being something completely different than we've ever tried in the statutes, but we think it is has real merit. We think that commercial farmers are reasonably intelligent, and if land was reasonably good, they would have already been doing something with it. So we said that marginal land should be land that is part, that is not part, of an ongoing operation that generates $20,000 in gross income per year. Now, that's a fairly high test, but you realize it takes 100 acres of wheat, perhaps, to generate that. It takes a much larger area, a much larger operation, say, in eastern Oregon, as far as acreage goes, to generate that in a cattle operation. But we were determined not to open up the ongoing commercial operations to the marginal lands concept. Then the second part is a two-part test that we have. Okay, if it's the land is not a part of a farm operation which generates $20,000, then we say it either has to be so parcelized that it is not really suitable for commercial operations, or the soil quality has to be so poor then that it, therefore, it also is not attractive to either a farm or a forest type operation. And so we developed some standards there and said on the a matter of parcelization that 70% of the land within the proposed marginal land area had to be cut in parcels that were 20 acres or less. 70% of it, 20 acres or less, if you're going to do it on the parcelization theory. We feel that this will have some impact in Western Oregon. In fact, I should emphasize at this time that our entire proposal is integrated in that one part ties into another. You'll find as we go on through it that we take away some of the tax breaks that people are getting in what is now termed the unzoned land. We think that some of the land that is now already exceptions have been taken on might better be put into a marginal land classification where it could retain some of the tax advantages they're now getting. The second part of this test, of course, was the soil capability class. And we adopted the fact that it should be either poorer than class 4 or a site, forest site index of 50. That's 50 cubic feet growth of timber per year. That's the junction between class 5 and 6. We did enough testing throughout the state to get some concept, and we recognize that in Western Oregon, almost all the forest land, almost all the foothill land that we would generally recognize was not really good enough for a commercial farm operator to want to be in, had a forest classification that was too high to put it into the marginal classification. But there is land there, significant land, we think, in Western Oregon that would come under the parcelization part of our test. In Southern Oregon in particular, where we've tested it, we found that there are genuine soils that are neither good forest soils nor good farm soils, in fact, in some rather large tracts that could come into our marginal land concept. With that, I'll let Lois Kanege go through the improvements in the exclusive farm use zone.
I'd just like to add one comment to Hector's description of on the marginal land proposal. If you would like to insert two words in the first paragraph under marginal agricultural lands, on the second line, as to the present definition of agricultural land, a new section that defines marginal land as land that is not, and then this is the insert, is not a contributing part, is not a contributing part of a farm operation. In other words, it may be that there'd be a rancher in Klamath County who would own 3,000 acres of farm soils, 2,000 of which was very productive soil, but 1,000 of which might come in this marginal land category. And we did not want to tie it up so tightly that he could not be released from that large block of acreage. On the other hand, we don't want it to be used. That's going to have to be a discretional decision on the part of local jurisdictions. We did not want it to be used as a way of taking a small part out of an ongoing farm which really is needed for farm buildings or to put cattle on in winter time when the prime farmland is flooded or things like that. moving on to the improvements to the EFU zones, and I'd like to just reiterate the introductory comment that Manton made. One of the things that we're finding in Oregon as we think about economic development is that we need to encourage and protect the existing industry. We need somehow to make a way to strengthen our, we're concerned primarily about agriculture, but we're also concerned about strengthening our timber industry. And we see the improvements of the EFU zone as the state saying we are going to give the same kind of protection to that number one industry of agriculture that we, a community, gives to industrial zone. We're going to give this a high priority. Oregon has done an amazing job of doing that already, and this is a little of fine-tuning. Some of the items that are listed in our proposal are already included, and I believe it's your Senate Bill 234. Have you heard held hearings on 234, which came from the Interim Land Use Committee?
We're having it on Monday.
You're having those on Monday. Okay. The first one, prohibiting new subdivisions in EFU zones, comes out of the Joint Committee on Land Use, Interim Committee on Land Use, and Agriculture for Oregon group supports that approval. That, and the same with the second part of the proposal. At the present time, churches and schools are outright permitted uses. Our rationale is that they should be conditional use, that the community ought to have a chance to say whether or not that school or church is related to the rural area in which it is planned, and it should be conditional rather than approved. The third one, we see being primarily utilized at a time when there have been mobile homes placed as hardship situations in connection with an EFU residence, and that mobile home, after the hardship is finished, oftentimes is not removed, even though it was given for a specifically limited period of time. We have had testimony from farmers who have had great difficulty with non-farm residents living in that kind of situation and have had no recourse because the county would not take action to have that really illegal residence then removed. Our proposal would allow a farmer or rancher to recover court costs and attorney fees if that farmer can obtain a court order that says the dwelling in the EFU zone is not being used for the approved purpose. The next item prohibits new non-farm dwellings in EFU zones in western Oregon, which is now more heavily impacted by non-farm residential settlements than eastern or central Oregon. We should point out that Farm Bureau has a policy, Farm Bureau's policy would prohibit new non-farm dwellings in all of Oregon. And I suppose that would be our first choice, that actually in the EFU zones, there should be no further encroachment by non-farm dwellings. Politically, realistically speaking, we felt that it was more important to get that restriction in Western Oregon, so this is what we're asking for this time. Western Oregon, again, for our purposes, is defined as those counties east of the Cascades, plus Hood River County, which I believe is a designation used in other...
Could you say that again?
Western Oregon is everything west of the Cascades, plus Hood River County.
Thank you.
Our next request would require that new or expanded aggregate extraction operations exhaust poorer agriculture soils before better soils are used. We have illustrations in some counties where some of the very best river bottom soils are being used, or there is a request to use them for gravel extraction. At the same time, just a few miles away, there would be poor quality soils, which again, for the economic threat of Oregon, could best be used before the prime farm soil. The third one on this page is one that we think is very important and is going to be very controversial, I'm sure. We believe that farmers should be given standing to challenge conditional use decisions in EFU zones. I live in Benton County and have been involved in numerous land use cases with other farmers and with a local organization, Friends of Benton County. One of the things that we discovered as we reviewed the activities of the last couple years is that a lot of the effort of the county's legal battles, as well as our own legal battles, had been the matter of standing. I can't put a dollar figure on it, But I know that in our county, the attorney and the county commissioners and all the related support system involved there through that whole process, and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars have been spent trying to disprove the standing of a farmer who was objecting to what was happening in another part of the county. We know that if a given county grants an exception or grants a conditional use of X in the southern part of the county, that's going to be a precedent, and that same kind of permission is going to be given in another part of the county as well. We also believe that because the state of Oregon has said agricultural land is of statewide concern, therefore, to limit standing only to those people who, in the traditional sense of the word, are aggrieved or are adjacent or something like that, is to narrow it so tightly that our EFU land, our EFU zoning, is really cannot be enforced in the most in the simplest way possible. The fourth item simply authorizes creation of life estates, so a retiring farmer can sell farm but retain farmhouse and surrounding land. That, in effect, that is really in effect now. We want to put it in the statute so that the counties see actually that this is there and use it as a viable alternative when someone says, but I want to cut off that farmhouse. The prohibition of new golf courses in EFU zones is also in Senate Bill 234 from the joint legislative interim. Hector, do you want to speak to that one a moment?
Well, simply, this is an outgrowth of something that we've been involved with in our area, and that OSU, as you may well know, wanted to put a golf course in on the Class 2 soil, the very best river bottom soil, just across the river from Corvallis, which is in an EFU zone, not within the urban growth boundary. And because they'd owned the land for some time, they felt this was permitted. We've taken this thing all through to the Court of Appeals, and they now cannot do it. We think, of course, it would be much better if they simply built their golf course on their side of the river, where it would be within an urban growth boundary and could serve the people for aesthetic purposes, rather than taking up the good farmland that is now zoned for farm use.
Now, we are not saying that there can be no new golf course. We're saying that if new golf courses are needed in EFU zones, then they should go through the exception process, rather than simply being a conditional or outright permitted use or a conditional use in the next one requires that new parcels created by land division be of a size appropriate for commercial agriculture, and I think that is self-explanatory. And immediately following that we would like to prohibit creation of new parcels for non-farm dwellings. Now, that prohibition we are recommending for both Western and Eastern Oregon. So even though we are not prohibiting new non-farm dwellings in Eastern Oregon, we are asking that there be no more new non-farm parcels in Eastern Oregon for the purpose of non-farm dwellings. So you have the parcels, the non-farm parcels which already exist in Eastern Oregon, could have a house if they went through the process of non-interference and so forth. The next last provides that if new farm dwellings are proposed in parcels smaller than the average farm of that type in the county producing at least $20,000 in gross income, or in parcels smaller than 20 acres, they be limited to mobile homes until the farm produces $20,000 or more in gross income. We would also like to have you include that some kind of stipulation that if that on that acreage there is planted blueberries or orchards or something which will produce $20,000 income, that be permitted. Now let me tell you why it's important that we have that kind of stipulation. So John Jones comes into the county planning department and says, I want to build a house in the EFU zone, and the county planning director says you can't build a non-farm house out there. And he said, well, but you could build a farmhouse. And so he says, all right, I'll build a farmhouse. How do I build a farmhouse? At least in our county, the answer is then, well, you just go and get a farm management person to write up a farm plan and bring it in and we'll approve it. We're saying that in order that the integrity of the EFU zone be preserved, those homes which really are there as rural residential homes but are called farm homes for the purposes of getting their building permit, instead of doing it that way, they need to somehow indicate that they are producing $20,000 gross income, or else they live in a mobile home until they can give evidence that the income is actually there. The last recommendation in this section would establish in each county a panel of commercial farmers named by the Board of Commissioners to review conditional use and land division applications in EFU zones. Now, we understand that the whole concept of the hearings officer, which we also would be satisfied with, has been reviewed at least in the Halcyon Committee, and I'm not sure if your committee has looked at it yet also. That is expensive and requires budget dollars. This would be a way of taking the political pressure off county commissioners by having commercial farmers do that review, and they would, in effect, function on quasi-judicial decisions as a hearings officer. And the decisions from them would then go directly to LUVA or whatever is there if LUVA is replaced. We would not be adverse to having one of those persons, one of five, let's say, be a consumer person. And we suggest also that the names of the commercial farmers from whom the Board of Commissioners would choose could be submitted by the local executive. Jim Smart, Polk County Cherry Farm.